And it was raining most of the time. We got some sunshine. And Ajahn Sajito, who was the abbot at Chithurst, who said he'd come here in 2014 and do some canoeing. He's a very, very gifted teacher and very popular. He's also one of my favorite writers. I can't resist. I got this morning. Ah, 'tis October. Here we can finally give up being warm. The persistent and ungrounded hope that arises in the heart of every true Brit around April and lasts in a flickering kind of way despite steady cloud and rain for nearly 6 months each year. Bracing against the damp wind, we fare onwards, having little choice. He's just so good with words. And he's funny. Anyway, it's just an aside. This morning I'm just sort of trying to keep building on the same themes, right? Not to make it too. As I've said recently, quite often, I used to teach. I thought I'd have to give more and more information. So I do list A, list B, list C, and you know, by the seventh day, people say enough. So, you know, Theravada has so many very, you know, very good conceptual packages, very good lists, but you need to take some and take it there very deeply. So I'm just going to try to not proliferate too much and keep to that one theme. So I'm trying to again indicate ways of what is the real heart of Buddhist practice is the mindfulness, and trying to indicate different ways of what that means for me. So this morning I was talking about watchfulness and availability, and that availability part, why that's important, that we need to somehow bring in the heart into it, that we're emotional beings, that we have ways of making effort which can be very aggressive, very goal-oriented, very determined. And oftentimes in the world, those are praised. Get something done and sort it out. But also we have ways of paying attention. If a child falls and like hurts himself, and we have a way of paying attention to the child, which isn't aggressive. It's very helpful, but it's very soft, it's very kind, it's very gentle, and we actually have a chance to actually understand the child in that way, you know, whoever. So in the same way, I think the heart practices are very, very important, because the attitude that we bring to our capacity to pay attention. So it's not just about attention, you know, it's about allowing something to unfold and be known. And I've been thinking about the peace of the heart in terms of humility and shyness. It's like, you know, the peace of the heart isn't like the ego is very loud and boisterous and very in your face kind of thing, isn't it? So the energies of the mind, which are very fearful and very doubtful and very, very greedy and so on, these are very strong energies, and they're sort of in your face. But the awareness of that, the knowing of that, is something that's always there, but we don't really notice it because we're so caught up in these objective energies that we experience. And so just to sit and allow this moment to unfold is a kind of humility, if you think about it. It's like a humility just to allow this moment to be what it is, to reveal itself in whatever way it is. And silence is a kind of shy thing. You don't it doesn't seem like much first, and then the mind wants to get something. The desire mind is never satisfied with that, and the desire mind always wants some kind of experience, it wants to get rid of something. So these heart practices, I would suggest that somehow that if you can bring your heart into each meditation, in the beginning of the meditation, that's very helpful, very fruitful. And just the way you do that kind of depends on your character, but very simple ways, gratitude. I do one practice where I do a kind of autobiography of people who have been good to me and helped me on my path. So I make them conscious. I do the same thing at the heart. I bring them into my heart, to my parents and so on. And then I do a little travelogue, Viradhamma on the road when he was a hippie, because those were very, very kind of formative years for me. And I go, you know, I met someone in Rochdale at U of T who got me into awareness. And then someone in Spain who sent me to Morocco, and someone in Morocco who sent me to India, and someone in India who sent me to the Buddha. So it's kind of a really neat thing to do. It's not self-indulgent, it's just touching the points where I truly feel grateful, and they get lost in memory, but they have a kind of profound impact on my heart. And because they have a profound impact on my heart, it opens my heart. And then I just try to be with that kind of resonance of the heart. And then apply attention from there. You know, like applying attention from a heart of gratitude or a heart of openness or a heart of forgiveness. So there's different ways we can open up to that softness, different ways we can remember that. I often cite the example of a man he was from Manchester, and he had just been fired from the coal board. I think it was pre-Maggie Thatcher, somewhere around those times. And he had been in the coal board for 30 plus years, was pretty high up in the echelon of managers, and just got the axe. Got kind of blindsided, and he was very bitter. He was very bitter and angry. And I was just trying to see if I could get his mind to another perception, because the bitterness was so, it so enveloped his psyche that everything had that filter on it. And so I just kind of, I was just exploring where he's at, and so, how are you doing with your parents? No, my parents. Yeah, how about your wife? No, she left me long ago. It's just like, anything I said, it was, But then finally I hit the fact that he worked for the RSPCA, and he got he took care of abandoned kittens and dogs and things like that. So he loved pets. I said, that's my entry. This is where the Buddha can get in. And so then we just, you know, he visualized some furry ball of loving beauty, and he brought that into his heart, and finally he started to have a different kind of perception in the mind. And then that's a kind of opening to another way of perception. And when we get in touch with those ways of relating and being, then that does, it becomes a kind of memory in us. You know, it's also a bodily memory. I find that very, very helpful. If you contemplate the feeling of like gratitude and compassion, it has a lovely bodily component, as opposed to like trying too hard. And that was one of my difficulties as a young monk. I just tried too hard. I was very determined, but it wasn't balanced with any kind of subtlety. You know, it was like really, really willful, and it caused me a lot of problems. And now, I mean, I can, with lots of experience, I can see as soon as I'm striving for some experience, right away the body's just starting to get tight and relax. And then if I'm not aware, which I know this pretty well now, but if my whole body's getting tense, I know you're just trying too hard. And you just kind of feel it through the whole body. So effort, which is conjoined with a with some sense of kindness is an effort that you can sustain. You can go with that a long, long time. But effort which is conjoined with a desire to become or get rid of, it's really hard to sustain that. And of course it's not fruitful because it's not really operating from presence, it's operating from memory. I want something that I don't have in the future. And so hence you have to allow and bear witness to difficulties. You just have to allow them to go through you, negative states of mind or whatever, in a kind of witnessing. So if you experience negative emotions, then see if you can bring up attitudes of compassion towards the negativity. See if you can have a sense of, oh, this is suffering. So rather than, oh God, I'm not doing well, say, oh, this is Viradhammo suffering. Suffering feels this way. So you constantly return to heart practices. And then if you have, you know, if there's something that really clicks for you, then make it a constant in your practice. Do it a lot. So you just, you don't have to do it like for a whole sitting. I don't, but I like to just set up the practice with that. Just go there, soften things down, and then let go, and just observe the way things are. In the listening practice, quite often people, when their minds begin to relax and they're not seeking any kind of object, they quite often will hear what we call a sound of silence, which is a kind of background, high-pitched sound. You've probably heard Ajahn Sumedho talks a lot about that. That's an interesting one to notice. If you're sitting and your mind is relaxing, it's quite open, you start to just get a sense of peaceful background humming, then that's a sign usually that the mind is relaxing. It's a good sign. If you try to grasp it, then you'll get tense again. But it is a kind of indication of the mind beginning not to grasp things. So there's a sense of space, a sense of emptiness, a sense of softness, and sometimes that background sound. And then when you get a kind of intuition about that. With a sense of space, as I've been indicating in body awareness, what I'm kind of suggesting is like make your practice broad rather than contracted. Don't focus down on something too hard. Make it open, make it broad, make it large. This is the language that helps me. And then within that largeness, you can see the body functioning, the breath functioning. So the body is functioning in awareness rather than the me being in the head trying to look at my knee. And I mean, I've suffered a lot from that too. I know the sweeping technique that most of us have seen from. I found that sometimes my head would just get tight because I was trying to see some bodily part. So I found again, it's just my character, something really broad and open. And then within that, kind of get a sense of like spacious awareness, open awareness, and then allow things to be conscious within that. So there's both a sense of space and a sense of groundedness. Now these are kind of vague terms, but they sort of work for me. So let's do some practice.